Thanks again for joining us on Intersections Radio. Today, I have a very special guest, a friend to KBOO. Deanna Fay is the author of the novel Thread of Sky and has previously joined us on KBOO's APA Compass. Since then, she published her memoir, Girl in Glass, How My Distressed Baby Defied the Odds, Shamed a CEO, and Taught Me the Essence of Love, Heartbreak, and Miracles. In this book, Deanna gives an honest take of what it means to survive when her daughter Mila arrived at 25 weeks and spent the next 3 months in the NICU, after which her husband's employer, AOL's CEO Tim Armstrong, publicly announced that due to two so-called distressed babies, AOL was going to make cuts to employee benefits. Deanna Fay joins me by phone from New York, and today we're going to talk about medical privacy as a civil right. Deanna, thank you so much for being on Intersections Radio today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first, let's talk about, as I said, medical privacy as a civil right. First, bring us back to that day, the context of the situation, the announcement by Tim Armstrong, your reaction. Take us back to that day.
Yeah, it was a day when my daughter had actually just started to take her first steps. She had been home from the hospital for about a year, and I was finally starting to feel like maybe we were recovering from the trauma that we had suffered when she was born so early. And then that day, these headlines started to ricochet throughout the media universe about these distressed babies that were blamed for these cuts to retirement benefits for all employees at the company where my husband worked. And at first, my reaction was just to feel shame and the sense that maybe my daughter was a burden, that maybe I had done something wrong that, you know, caused the company to make cuts for everyone else. And then as this kind of snowballed into a huge media firestorm and this dehumanizing phrase, distressed babies, just kept showing up again and again in headlines and ironic tweets, and cable news discussions, it finally struck me that I need to speak out to defend my daughter, to defend her right to the care that saved her life, and also to show that no one deserves to get singled out for needing medical care, let alone a newborn baby.
Exactly. It was, from my end, personally, it was so bizarre because, first of all, the announcement happened, and that was already, you know, completely unfathomable. And then when we saw an interview with you, we know her. That's Deanna Fay. She's been on our show. I feel that, you know, we, to be honest, we live in this very litigious society. And I was shocked that Tim Armstrong kind of opened himself up in to this egregious error that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was shocking to so many Americans, to so many employees, to parents of babies who've needed medical care. But what I came to see after the controversy subsided, you know, I came forward, the story went viral, Tim Armstrong apologized, and I forgave him. But then I received this outpouring of messages from people just across the country who told me that in some way or another, they had also been shamed and blamed for their medical expenditures. And that really opened my eyes to this issue that so many of us need to really pay attention to. We think that we have medical privacy, and in fact, it's increasingly under threat in the society today. And I think what's so unusual, really, about what happened to me is that it happened on stage at a town hall meeting, and that it became the subject of countless headlines. But the fact is that people suffer this kind of violation of their basic civil rights day after day after day, and there's not a whole lot that's changed since my story became so public.
That's definitely something I wanted to talk about today, but just one moment before we get to that, for some clarification, AOL, that was your husband's employer, their benefits had covered, you know, what were they were required for your medical bills, and you mentioned that many times in the book that you were all grateful for that. So what is the incentive for CEOs to be safe, so to speak? I guess if you could give a point of clarification for what happens behind the scenes as far as the financial gain for CEOs who cover employee benefits, but without any catastrophic event.
Well, you know, it's a great question because this is something that's meant to be opaque to ordinary people. You know, these are decisions that get made behind the closed doors of corporate boardrooms. And generally, we have no idea how our insurance is actually paid for and how it's covered and how much it actually costs. In this case, Tim Armstrong came forward and slapped a price tag on my daughter. I've since learned from multiple experts, there's a consensus that he seemed to have been completely exaggerating, if not making up this $1 million price tag. That
right,
he
had put $1 million, he called it the $1 million baby or something.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think it's important to remember that he was at that point under fire for the cuts that he had made to retirement benefits when the company had just posted its best earnings in a decade. So at first he tried to blame Obamacare. That didn't really fly. So then he went after these two babies. I think, though, one of the larger issues that we really need to look at is that catastrophic events are the very basic purpose of health insurance. That's what health insurance is designed to cover. Nobody, no single individual can pay for the care that's required when you suffer a catastrophic event, such as getting hit by a car or suffering a spinal injury or having an extremely premature baby. This is part of basic employee benefits when health benefits are offered. And in many cases, such as AOL now, the incentives that are in play is that corporate bonuses are often directly pegged to their cost cutting. And so CEOs often have direct motivation to monitor employees' personal health because that is a major item on the, you know, corporate balance sheets in terms of expenses for a corporation. And it's easy for them to target high cost individuals. But the truth is that any fiscally responsible health insurance plan should take into account that in any given year, someone might have a premature baby. And there seems to be a consensus that, you know, one, two, you know, three premature babies born to employees of a company such as AOL would not have actually driven up costs for the entire company. That's just not how insurance works. And so this was more of, you know, just a dishonest justification for corporate cost cutting as opposed to a rational accounting of how these expenses actually play out for a corporation and its employees.
That is really something, because it's like you were saying, then if they're saying that the bonuses are tied to this, then of course there is incentive for higher ups in a company to monitor their employees' medical records, and or that is to say their health. They obviously cannot directly get access to medical records, but the crux of the issue is obviously that, you know, your privacy was violated, and it wasn't just you. After this incident, you had written a piece for Slate calling out the CEO, and then after which you received many letters and emails from other people who had experienced discrimination in the similar fashion. You had just mentioned that. Talk about some of these stories.
Yeah, I mean, these stories were hugely eye-opening and often heartbreaking. I heard from a mother of a premature baby who still cries every time she remembers how the insurance rep at the company stood up and said, well, rates are going up for everyone because someone had the nerve to have these premature babies. I heard from a woman who was fired after a cancer diagnosis and blamed for being too expensive. I heard from a father who was fired for no apparent reason other than that his baby had just landed in the NICU. And the harsh reality is that by law, our employers are not supposed to be able to access individual employees' medical records.
Precisely.
But the fact is they do. They often, in the age of electronic data, our CEOs often can look into the medical records of individual employees. And
well, and how can they access that if that's illegal?
Well, Yeah, so some of this happens in a gray area of the law, and this is where the law is extremely complicated, but also extremely outdated, because as all of our health information becomes increasingly digitized, it also becomes much more free-flowing, and in many cases, the information goes straight from our providers to our insurers. In many cases now, our insurers are our employers. By law, the only people at our employers who should have access to that information are the people whose work directly concerns the health plan, such as human resources managers. But the reality is that the law is written so broadly, and the reality in any work space is that there are no clear boundaries. You know, what we think of as a firewall is actually extremely porous. The other thing is that, you know, by law, our health records are basically free game. You know, it's kind of a free for all once they've been so-called, they've been anonymized. That's the term of art, where names and addresses and identifying details such as those have been stripped away. But my case showed just how easily these so-called anonymous medical records can be, in some cases, immediately and very often very easily traced to specific individuals. Once you're talking about, you know, medical conditions that such as a premature baby or a rare form of illness, you know, a cancer, it's not difficult at all for people who share a workspace, with people who share supervisors, to very easily identify the individuals in question. And that often leaves those individuals open to the exposure of profound trauma, physical and emotional trauma. It leaves them open to this culture of blame for being, quote unquote, expensive, for needing medical care. And it leaves them open to getting fired for their medical expenditures in the most extreme instances.
Absolutely. And have you heard of other cases of people who have been presumably let go from their jobs, fired from their jobs for a medical reason, for being considered so-called too expensive? Have you heard of any cases where people have fought back or any kind of lawsuits or anything like that?
That's a great question. I do know of a couple of cases that have made the news. A man who worked for Wells Fargo, who was fired in just such blatant fashion right before his daughter was scheduled to undergo expensive cancer surgery. So his insurance was revoked, and his daughter actually died because they were waiting for a new insurance plan to kick in, which never did. I think that case is still wending its way through the courts. In most cases, it's extremely hard for any individual to fight back. When you're talking about violations of medical privacy, these are people who often are still struggling to recover from devastating medical events. They are in fear of losing their jobs. They can't jeopardize their paychecks, let alone their health insurance policies, which come through their jobs. And I'm extremely fortunate in that I was able to speak out to defend my daughter. I'm fortunate that my husband was able to leave the company on his own terms after the controversy. But I recognize that most people are not as fortunate, and the damage from these violations of medical privacy are often devastating.
In fact, that brings me to my next question. I couldn't help but think about how this issue is complicated for folks who may not have access to advocacy or know their rights, more marginalized communities, or even people who do know their rights, but are, as you were saying, just are not in a position where they can fight back or have access to, you know, media, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point. Medical privacy is an issue of civil rights. It's an issue of social justice. And the people who tend to be most vulnerable are women, parents, people with disabilities. And it is extremely hard for most people to fight back. But it's also a question of policy. By law, victims of medical privacy violations can report these violations to the Office of Civil Rights. But there's little incentive to do so. Most, if there are any financial penalties that are assessed, those are paid directly to OCR, not to the victims. There's very little transparency in terms of what happens once once people report these violations. And it seems that apart from, you know, a few $1 million penalties for huge data security breaches, in most cases that I think any ordinary person would recognize as an egregious violation of medical privacy, the penalties tend to be slapped on the wrists, you know, retraining of staff, rewriting of forms. So as it stands now, there's simply not a lot of incentive and a whole lot of downside for people to come forward and essentially take on the role of whistleblower against their own employers.
Of course, what would you like to see happen? We're talking about health privacy, medical privacy as a civil right. What would you like to see happen ideally?
I mean, I think the first thing that needs to happen is we need to recognize the scope of the problem. There's so much shame and silence that surrounds these issues. And what I hear again and again from people who have been targeted for their medical bills is the word shame. They feel shame for having been victims of medical crises, as if that's something that we can all control. They feel shame for being, quote unquote, expensive, as if the costs of care are, you know, their own fault, as opposed to the result of how our health and care industry is structured. And they're terrified of being considered unemployable in the future. So we don't have much understanding of just how often these violations occur, but I know from my own inbox and these stories that continue to pour in every day that they are certainly much more common than we would like to think, and that we are all vulnerable to this kind of exposure. So I think, you know, we need to encourage people to speak up when this happens. And we also need to understand something that's actually very difficult to understand, which is that right now we're kind of up against armies of lobbyists whose interests lay in keeping our health data as valuable commodities that we don't really have any control over. So what we need is federal law to safeguard our right to healthcare to health privacy. Originally, when HIPAA was passed, that's the law that
protects our privacy,
speaking,
right?
Yeah, governs our health privacy as well as other issues concerning healthcare. There was supposed to be the right of consent, which basically means that we should be able to authorize, entities to look into our health records for the purposes of treating us as patients. That was actually stripped out of the law by the Bush administration.
That brings up a whole another set of issues.
Exactly. And so since then, you know, we tend to think that we have privacy because we have to sign all those notices at doctor's offices.
Right.
But the truth is we have very little control over our own health information. And for as long as that's the case, we are vulnerable to getting discriminated against for our medical records.
Absolutely.
On the basis of our medical records, I should say.
I'm so sorry. We're running out of time. I hope your family and your children are doing well.
Thank you so much. Mila's just, she's the toughest little creature I've known. She teaches me about resilience every single day, and
Absolutely.
She's celebrating her third birthday next week. So, it's a happy ending for us, but I'm haunted by how vulnerable so many people are, and I think this is an issue that we all need to understand. Health privacy is something that I think can sound abstract and theoretical, and in
right.
fact, for all of us, our health information is the most sensitive information that's out there, and it is very out there for most of us at this point in time.
Exactly. Deanna, thank you so much for chatting with me for Intersections Radio.
Thank you so much.
Deanna Fay is the author of Girl in Glass, How My Distressed Baby Defied the Odds, Shamed a CEO, and Taught Me the Essence of Love, Heartbreak, and Miracles. I'm Sari Gamata. Thanks for listening.